You are listening to the podcast of the M2 Women Journey to Excellence series with Lexus, the all-new UX. Thanks to Victor, JJ Gardner, Legacy Contracting and New Zealand Steel. These conversations are from our live forums held in 2018 and 2019. For more details, go to journeytoexcellence.co.nz.
To quote a previous audience member, because we get feedback after each of these things, quote, more men should be involved in the panels, or a man. I think the days of all women panels are gone, and the inclusion and exclusion conversation is not moving forward unless this happens. Well, we couldn't agree more. It was just a matter of finding a willing one, and we have. He's an exceptional one. Rob Campbell is a man of many talents and backgrounds. He's the chair of Sky City, Somerset Group Holdings Limited, Tourism Holdings Limited, and Well Networks Limited. He's a director of Precinct Properties New Zealand Limited as well. He's got over 30 years' experience in capital markets and is a director or advisor to a range of investment fund and private equity groups in New Zealand, Australia, Hong Kong and the US. He is an outspoken advocate of diversity at board and governance levels within New Zealand companies. Please welcome Rob Campbell as our first panellist today. It's a long walk, Rob. And I'll make it longer by getting you to sit at the end chair, please. Thank you very much. Vanessa Sorensen is the Enterprise Director at Microsoft. She's got more than two decades' experience in the New Zealand tech sector. She joined Microsoft New Zealand in 2017, overseeing a large portfolio of business customers and sales teams after a career at Spark spanning 20 years, most recently as GM. Also serving as Microsoft's diversity and inclusion team leader, Vanessa leads initiatives to improve gender and cultural diversity in technology and leadership, particularly through education. She's passionate about encouraging more girls to study and embrace STEM subjects and increasing Māori and Pacifica representation in both technology and business, working with schools and education providers to help ensure all students have equal access to technology. She's also a strong driver of change and digital transformation across New Zealand organisations, regularly engaging with business leaders to help them unlock the potential of their organisations through the adoption of digital technologies such as cloud and AI. Please welcome Vanessa Sorensen to the stage. It's when I get a little bit of a fangirl moment. I've had the privilege of talking to all of our panellists beforehand, and they're so exciting. We need to get into this. Tui Taho is the Director of Public Engagement for our National Library. She's got over a decade of experience in business startups under her belt. She's the woman that you want to go to when you have that light bulb moment. She's worked with multiple entrepreneurs wanting to kickstart creative businesses, VR developers, major NZ fashion houses and export organisations. She was the Chief Executive of Creative HQ. She established the Lightning Lab Accelerator Program and then went on to set up the world's first cultural accelerator, Mahuki, which was Te Papa's innovation hub. She joined us on our panel in Wellington at the wonderful Te Papa last year. Mahuki empowers communities to use culture and technology to create sustainable prosperity and entrepreneurs to succeed commercially in and beyond the cultural and heritage sector. We discovered her at Te Papa last year. We're delighted to have her on one of our Auckland panels. Please welcome Tui Taho. And our final panellist for this afternoon is Kate Daly. Kate was appointed Director, People and Communications at BNZ in November 2017. In this role, Kate is responsible for leading the organisational culture, talent and capability initiatives that will enable BNZ to transform banking and deliver outstanding commercial performance through the success of its people. She's got a background in human resources and communications leadership, having held senior roles across these portfolios since 2001. Most recently, Kate was Chief People and Communications Officer with Fletcher Building Limited. Prior to that, she was GM People and Performance and Communications with Coca-Cola Amatil, NZ Limited, Vice President of the Human Resources at Deutsche Bank in London, and Vice President HR at Merrill Lynch, also in London. Kate, come on up to the stage. Right, hello. Welcome, everybody. Finally, we're here. We're starting off this panel discussion. I want to start first of all because a lot of the next couple of hours is going to be a lot of personal stories, and it's going to be a lot of stories of what you're doing within your own businesses. But I wanted to start with personal challenges or experiences with diversity throughout your stellar careers. Kate, we'll start with you.
I think as I've sort of traversed my career, probably some of the most challenging moments I've had actually were in London. I worked in banking for the Deutsche Bank and Merrill Lynch and looked after front office bankers and, you know, had some pretty personally challenging situations where, you know, you have to call conduct and misconduct and when something's an accepted norm and you're standing up and saying, actually, that's not the way I think we should behave. Sometimes that can be personally quite confronting. But I've always felt you have to have you have to have your values and you have to be really true to what who you are as a person and then really, you know, use really good influencing skills to try and shape that around you. And I think most recently I'm also on the board of the Blues and Auckland Rugby, and that's been a really interesting experience for me going into organisations where, it is very, very male-dominated and it's all about a game that is mostly played by men, and trying to influence around the board table the importance of thinking not just about who's injured in the weekend but also thinking about organisation and talent and how you manage that and how we face into some of the challenges as a sport we're facing has been really challenging for me as a woman to get that credibility and influence the discussions. So I think those would be probably...
Just further on from that, we're talking the early 2000s, right, when you were at the start of your career, mid-career?
The start. I mean, I think, you know, going back to that point in time, it was very common in London, in banking, you know, strip clubs, alcohol.
Has it changed?
Oh yeah, it has changed, but it was really, you know, very, very prevalent and very accepted. And, you know, when we would pay bonuses, our bankers would go and try and drink pubs dry of champagne and end up at strip clubs and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, you do have to stand up and actually say, well, there are females who work in that environment who find that really uncomfortable. And actually that's not the behaviour that we want our employees to be demonstrating. And back then that was very, you know, it was really accepted. So I do think it has moved on significantly, and I think people are a lot more aware now around their responsibility as an employee and a co-worker to make sure that they provide their peers and colleagues with a safe working environment. So I do think it's moved on significantly.
Tui.
Oh, well, kia ora, I'm Carly, and thank you, M2, for the opportunity to fly up from Wellington, where it is raining, to be here.
Oh, give us some of that, please.
I guess when I, even before I turn up, everyone's going, is this a man or a woman? You know, Tui Taho. And then often I have to listen out for the, is Mr. Howe here? And I go, who's that? So even before I turn into go anywhere, there's that part of it. I kind of hit tick a number of the boxes. I'm Māori, I'm a woman. I grew up on the rough side of the tracks. I'm a single mum. Hopefully you didn't notice, I'm also a little bit fat. And I got a high voice. So there's a few things, you know, working there. And have absolutely experienced times when I'm like, you know, I think you're judging me. But also lately I've been thinking more and more about actually how much I've held myself back and how much actually a lot of the things are going on in my own mind. And I've already made some assumptions or some things about how they're judging me or whatever. And so one of the things I decided growing up on the dark side of the tracks was, you know, I want to be the doctor, I want to be successful. And so that desire is what's always sort of pushed me forward. And also over the last little while, as age creeps upon me, thinking about actually the issue of shame, and so actually how much shame has held me back. So, I got really deep really quickly, didn't I? Sorry about that. But actually, I really wanted to share that because actually, I just actually want to live a joyous life now and go for it. So, and there've absolutely been moments when it's like, actually, that's not right. I also have a background in international trade and have experienced that, you know, the alcohol levels got to a certain level and I should go now because, you know, it's kind of getting a bit weird. But actually, what I'd like to bring to the conversation today is actually also examining what it is within our own minds that's holding us back.
Fantastic, Tui. Keep it coming for the next hour, please. Love it. Vanessa, hi.
Yeah, kia ora. What an amazing bunch of faces out here. Look, exactly what the ladies have said. I too grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, so to speak, and I think really for me it was, you know, starting out in tech, pretty much a man's world. 9 times out of 10, I was the only woman in the room. And I think I went through a long period of time thinking I had to fit in and that I had to pretend to be something I wasn't. Whether it meant partying until late in the night or putting up with innuendo or comments, most of it was sort of that imposter syndrome that's been loud and clear with me for most of my life, feeling actually this is the way I do need to be. And I think one of the greatest things that's happened to me really in the last 10 years is reaching out to more women. Because I actually think that women just never support women enough, and we seem to actually also compete with each other. Where I felt when we started linking arms and going, actually the power of what we can do collectively is really and truly what's going to get us there. Whether it's talking to each other and being able to be completely open and empathetic with each other, but actually taking on what is primarily seen as what the boys can do. You know, for me, I have faced, an amazing career, always promoted before I felt ready. I have to admit it, when I was promoted to be GM, I asked the CEO, are you sure you don't want to go out to market? You know, these are things that are really, really common. And his response is, we knew you'd say that. You are the right person for the job. Pull your head in and hold it high. But I still accepted that job, knowing I was fundamentally underpaid compared to my male counterparts. And so I think that's where my passion comes from. Yes, I'm a high school dropout. Yes, I grew up in caravan parks. Yes, I didn't go to the right school. And that is why I believe I can make such a difference, because we can, we will, and I did.
Fantastic. Thanks, Vanessa. Rob, welcome. You're amongst a stellar panel this afternoon. It's great to have you with us.
Kia ora tatu. Look, I can't really provide a story that's the equivalent of those. I've had a very lucky experience bumbling through a variety of roles in life. And what I've tried to do as I've had various roles, be it in academia or trade unions or more recent decades in business, is to make a deliberate effort to immerse myself in different worlds and to try to keep an open mind to what those worlds are about and what they're doing and to learn from them. I think one of the hardest things in life for all of us is to break out of the patterns that our life establishes. And so that's the big challenge. I've been very lucky in my life in many ways. And one of the ways is that I've at several points in my working career been challenged by very strong women to stand up and stand beside them in situations where it hasn't necessarily been all that easy for them, and that's been one of the great gifts that I've had from those strong women that I've worked with. So having an opportunity when I can do it to make some small contribution back is sort of, I think, the least I can do.
Fantastic. Can we just expand a little bit on that, Rob, and tell us about your experience with the New Zealand trade unions and equally to all of you, and feel free to jump in. Where your passion, if you haven't already touched on it, for diversity and having that empathy and walking in other people's shoes has come from, Rob?
Sure, yeah. Look, I sort of, like most things in my life, really fell into the trade union movement. I thought I was going to be an academic. I was an economist and a bit interested in labour history. And because it was fashionable to be left-wing in those days at university, I fell into the, you know, Committee on Vietnam and anti-apartheid movements and those things. Through that, met some trade unionists. They asked me if I would help them draft a wage claim once, and that led to a career for a decade or two in trade union work. And it was very male. It was even quite shocking, frankly, for a middle-class white guy to go into the trade unions. Working-class movement was very heavily dominated by men and by extremely sexist attitudes. So that was quite a surprise to me and quite hard to deal with. And while I was kind of working out what my right role was there to do, I came across a woman called Sonia Davies, who, if you don't remember, I hope you'll read about her. She's got a wonderful book about her life called Bread and Roses. And Sonia Davies was a very early labour movement person who fought for a thing called a Working Women's Charter that was laughed at when it was first raised in the trade union movement. Sonia incredibly bravely, along with obviously many other women, fought hard for that, and I was lucky enough, fortunate enough to be someone working alongside her while she did that. I learnt an enormous amount for it, and I can recall a Federation of Labour conference in the old Wellington Town Hall, Sonia actually booting me in the arse and saying, "There's been four women talk to this, it's about time you got up." And so I did, and we sort of managed to get that through. And then again, and some years later, again, this is, people don't like to remember these things, but the Labour Party in the 1980s wasn't the most woman-friendly place in the universe either. And I happened to wind up on the national executive there alongside Margaret Wilson and Helen Clark, who had quite strong attitudes on the topic. To say the least, and were intolerant of anyone who was active there to not be very supportive of what was happening in the Labour Party in those days. And again, two very strong women who were fantastic leadership to me in thinking about how you involved women in organisations that had previously been very male-dominated. And of course, I left there and found yet another male-dominated world in the business world and boards. And while there are many very strong women working in that environment, I've got to say I think it's sort of the last bastion. Boards are being incredibly slow in New Zealand to adapt to the need for gender diversity, which I think is a pressing business issue for all of us. It is down to sexism and nothing else. I spoke this morning at an Institute of Directors breakfast. I don't always spend my life at luxurious breakfasts and lunches, but too much of the time, but I did down at the Northern Club, which I hasten to say I'm not a member of. I talked a bit there about gender diversity. It wasn't the main topic, but I did talk about it a little bit. And nobody took any objection to what I was saying. Two people came up to me afterwards and said, "Yeah, pretty good, Rob. It's always very popular at these things, but the truth is you can't find women to do these jobs, can you?" And in some ways, you know, that was quite shocking, because the point I'd been making was exactly the opposite, and it is untrue. And there's a new word which I just, if I can just warn you about... It's not a new word, but what is used now, watch for people who talk about appointment on merit, because it is the big trap that people fall into now. They say, "Look, you know, absolutely, we should have gender diversity, but it has to be merit." But what they mean by merit is men. What they mean by merit is the characteristics that male directors currently have. If you challenge them to say what constitutes merit for what a business needs today, you will quickly be able to disaggregate that and show that, in fact, what is being talked about is not merit, but privilege. And that's sort of my final ramble on it.
But yeah, I mean, I'd love to add to that. I mean, yeah, amazing. You know, I think back to your point, you know, everyone knows that the saying is, you see that role that goes up and you go, man, I want that. And the woman goes, but you know what, I've kind of only got 80% of all of the things that they're looking for. And a guy goes, oh, I've only got 10%, I'm going to be fine. And this 100%. Is part of what we've got to change, because that inner critic and confidence is why I believe so many people, or women especially, aren't putting their hand up. But also I think for many of us, you know, all of the stereotypes of, you know, ladies, have you had, you know, don't show emotions at work, you know, don't cry. Or if you do, or you're being that woman that's stamping, you know, getting the fist on the desk, oh, yep, she's just like a bloke. So it's goddamn confusing, right? I mean, what are you supposed to be? Well, just be yourself. Merit. Go for that role because you truly do believe in yourself. You know, lean into people that are actually going to tell you the things that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. And find incredible male mentors like this. People that truly say, I believe in women and you can do this. That's what most need. Because 9 times out of 10, I think also women go, you know what? I can't be bothered. I don't want to be involved in that sort of thing if that's what's going to be the underlying behavior. So find incredible male supporters and mentors. That would be critical.
Fantastic. Thanks, Vanessa. Look, we are going to widen the discussion throughout the next hour into other diversity groups as well. But while we're on women and boards, Kate, I'm interested in where your interest and empathy for diversity came from, and then pathways to get to a board, because I imagine there's plenty of women in the room here that want to be leaders, that want to be on boards. And it sounds to me like a lot of the barriers, especially what the three of you have brought up, is self-confidence.
So my passion for diversity actually was born out of my time living in London. And when we were living there, and for those of you who have lived in England and in London, there's quite a class structure, and you can identify people in terms of where they've grown up by their accent. So they do tend to categorise people by where they come from. And I used to say, it's not like that back in New Zealand. You know, everyone can have a go. It's a great country if you're, you know, we don't prejudice against people for their backgrounds. And then I came home and started working here and thought, actually we do, because it's all white. And so I became really interested in why Māori and Pacifica and the company I was working for couldn't find a pathway through from the front line and from you know, that sort of middle management through to senior ops. So I started becoming very interested in engaging with them and learning a lot culturally around the barriers that workplaces put up for different communities and different cultures. And without even thinking about it, you put bias up in terms of how you select people and the recruitment process you make people go through, because that's not necessarily how it happens in other cultures. Other cultures, particularly Pacifica, you know, your church will ask you to be a leader and they will engage you, and it's a very different process. So I became very interested in the Māori and Pacifica. And at the same time, in the same workplace, I became very good friends with someone I worked with who's gay. And through coming into his community with his partner and understanding and talking to them about the prejudice and the bias that they experience from, you know, a very young age in their life, I just became very passionate about trying to help that community and be a very, very strong advocate for them, and to make sure that, you know, the organisations I worked for supported those communities. And obviously, you know, I've always been, as a female, I'm a strong advocate. I have 3 children. I want my daughter too, and I want my sons to look and say, you know, it's great to have a career and have a family and do both. So it's something, I'm a deep equalitarian at heart, and I'm quite a socialist in that respect, and I feel very passionately that for Aotearoa New Zealand, we must embrace diversity because we need to do that to win on the global stage. So in terms of boards, one of the things that I find interesting when I look at boards is the selection criteria that they apply to choose board members. And they often, in my experience, looking at boards, they're looking for accountants and lawyers and CEOs. They're not looking for marketers. They're not looking for HR people. And those are the professions that women predominantly fall in. And I would hazard a guess that if we went across the NZX 50 and asked all the CEOs what the top three things they're worried about, people would be one of them. Yet as an HR professional, I look across the boards and I don't see HR represented in many boards at all. So I think for me it's around how boards think about opening, you know, what skills they're looking for, because I think they're probably over-dominated towards business skills. And the other thing that I think is a glaring gap is age. Because one of the things in the banking sector that we're looking at is this most amazing rapid digitalisation of everything. Workplaces, you know, customer preferences. And if we don't get young people who think like that and act like that onto our boards and helping us make decisions, we're going to get left behind. Because what I worry about is that the age gaps and the thinking across the age gaps is just becoming more and more extreme. And some of the companies like WeChat, Amazon Pay, the biggest bank actually in America is Amazon Pay. They don't have a branch, they don't have a retail network, they don't even have a banking office. They do it all online and they're now the biggest bank. And, you know, if you look at some of the companies, the startups that are coming through Silicon Valley, average age is 27. So they're thinking about business in a very different way, and they have the capability to scale and come into countries like ours so easily. That would be the other thing, I think, if I were on a board, you know, I'd be looking at. In terms of getting into boards, the Ministry for Women's Affairs has a really good website, and they have a survey you can complete where you put your skills in and it will help you identify the best way to get onto a board. Normally, not-for-profits are great, a really good way to get in, but I also think if you really want to be on a board, the best thing you can do is try and find a male sponsor who's on a board who can help sponsor you and help you get the profile you need to get on, because often, and like with all things, it's often sometimes having those connections and making those connections work for you. So don't be shy in asking someone to help you out.
Rob, would you like to pick up the mantle here? Because I alluded at the start that you're on some good boards and some bad boards. I'm curious, I love that point that Kate's made about looking for diversity on boards with different skill sets, different age, different gender, etc. But do shareholders, do owners demand diversity on boards?
First, I think Kate's exactly right. I agree with what she says. There are investors who push for diversity on boards just as they push for sustainability programs on boards. That is with the, probably the most honourable exception being the New Zealand Super Fund and Sam Stubbs Simplicity. New Zealand funds tend not to be nearly as active in that as some of the big funds are from overseas. I'm a bit of a cynic about this. Whether the enthusiasm of some of the big investment funds in the world for diversity and sustainability sustains a decent downturn, I'm not quite so sure. I think that that view could well change, and I think that, you know, the big investment funds are possibly fair weather friends on some of this stuff, but at the moment, they will certainly do that. But you have boards are largely self-selective, and there's a very strong self-protection mechanism going on to appoint people like us to the board, just as there is on the local bowling club or rugby club. Or
so then, there's no diversity of thought. Then there's no diversity of thought, right?
No, there's absolutely. And in fact, people, I think most boards, unless they're pushed quite hard, and no matter what they say, actually place a premium on uniformity of thought rather than diversity of thought still. There are some exceptions, but typically it needs someone to lead and push quite hard to make the change. And Kate's identified the need for more people with HR background, with digital skills, and frankly just younger people, to say nothing of cultural diversity, to be represented on boards. You can approach this from either end, and I think you reach the same conclusion. Some people approach it from a social justice point of view, and I think there's a lot to commend that point of view. But there's an equal view that simply says, if you're going to survive as a business in an environment which is diverse, where people are diverse, then you are going to have to be diverse or you won't be there either. So I think, to me, whether you start from the business end or the social justice end, doesn't matter, you end up with the same position. But it does need individuals to take the lead. It is not by mistake that New Zealand boards are moving very slowly to achieve gender diversity. It is a deliberate policy adopted by the men on the boards right now, because they can change it immediately. It's only last year, I think, that the Minister for Women's Affairs made the observation that some white men were going to old white men were going to have to get off boards to achieve gender diversity, and she got howled down. It was an observation that is simply correct as a matter of arithmetic. If you can't get people like me shifting, then you can't achieve the gender diversity that we need. And so we need to have much greater turnover in boards. We need to get rid of the idea that these things are sinecures that you achieve at the end of your career. We need to recognise that the value of a director is what they can do prospectively, not what they may have done retrospectively. And when you start to think about your directors that way, I think you'll develop a different skill set and you'll develop a different group of people coming through. But we've got to deliberately take it on, because at the moment we're just replicating ourselves.
I just want to say, I'm at the beginning stages, I guess, of my governance career, and I've just recently joined a board, which is the Mary Potter Hospice in Wellington. It's a not-for-profit, and we provide palliative care for people approaching end of life. And a friend shoulder tapped me, you know, to put my hand up for it, and I said, oh, look, I think it would just be really sad, and I just might be too sad. And she said, actually, Tui, it's a wonderful, joyous, you know, celebration of life. I went, okay. And what I realised from that was, firstly, it was really important that actually that I had a purpose and a mission for being part of that board. So many people had applied, and when I was getting ready in the morning, I was going off to interview, I thought, what am I bringing? Because actually I had maybe felt like I had 50% of the skills. I was new to, wasn't quite there. But I thought, actually, I can, resonate with how that, that has resonated with people in my life. And so bringing that, I think, being on a board, I'm going to be on a board, and then I'm going to tick that off on my CV. Actually, what I found really important, to have that sync, that actually I care about what this organisation does. I really want to support that. Because actually, what I've found, and I'm sure the others have too, is being on a board is actually quite hard. It actually works, and I don't get paid. So there's actually a lot of work. So actually, I have to generate that, what is this? Why am I, committing myself? And it's actually because this is really important work, and it matters to me. And then I, as a consequence of that, I gain new skills, I get to help out, and that might help me move on later.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tui. Let's talk about the barriers, the benefits of diversity. What have you seen in your own workplaces, in your own lives, by welcoming people from all walks of life into different aspects of your workplace? Kate?
Well, was anyone here at the Tupatoa dinner last night? No, okay. So 3 years ago, a group of us, sort of corporates and Global Women, got together and decided actually we need to create an organisation that's a pathway for young Māori and Pacifica into corporates, because corporate environments are really not welcoming to this community. So we had 150 undergraduate Māori and Pacifica last night here celebrating their graduation, who are all working in corporates in New Zealand, which is an amazing achievement. This is our third year. And when you talk to those people, so what we do now is we have a pōwhiri. when we welcome our graduates and with Tupu Toa. And we actually take a half a day to really try and celebrate inclusion and celebrate welcoming people spiritually into our organisation to the point where that's actually going to become part of our onboarding. We have a Māori business unit and we're going to be making that a deep part of how we welcome people, because we feel that's a really special, as the Bank of Aotearoa, we want people to come in and really feel that connection. So we're thinking a lot more about that and how you, when people come in, because I think your first day at work signals the approach your organisation has to diversity and inclusion. We are building a new induction program, and one of our modules, when you learn about the BNZ and who we are and all that stuff on the first day, is going to be about bringing your whole self to work and how we want people to embrace flexibility. We want people to talk about their culture, around their personal, you know, what they want to help them be successful. So I think, you know, thinking is changing in terms of organisations. I'm sure there are other organisations who do that. But I think, you know, often we get it so wrong because people turn up on day one and, you know, you actually don't take that time to actually welcome that person in a really engaging way. It's sort of get to work. Often you don't have devices or you don't have stuff set up, and it's just this flurry of panic for a week trying to make that person productive. And at the end of the week, they sort of sit there and think, well, that wasn't much fun. So we've got a long way to go, but we're starting to think a lot more about that.
Yeah, look, I'd love to add as well. When I first joined Microsoft, I heard of this pillar that they'd set up called Māori and Pacifica. And one of the senior leaders had left, and so they said, right, who would like to, you know, be part of this? And I absolutely put my hand up. And because one of the things I noticed when I came into Microsoft, amazing amount of women, that was phenomenal. But I said, wow, you've got this pillar. Where are all the Māori and Pacifica people? And what I heard back was, well, they didn't really interview that well. I was like, okay, well, tell me a bit about that. Well, you know, we got a few in and we asked some questions and they just didn't look that into it. You know, they sort of looked down and they weren't really engaging. I was like, wow, maybe you kind of need to go to their whānau. So I went and spent quite a bit of time with Ngāti Whātua and Ōrākei, and we've got an amazing partnership with them to really understand actually what are their culture, what are they actually being brought up, how do they interview, how, you know, and it's been phenomenal. We're also partnering with Tupu Toa, and we've just brought in our first Māori interns, and we've got the most incredible young lady called Venus who's joined us. And you know when you get to my age and you go, if only I could talk to my 22-year-old self. Well, I had that opportunity yesterday. And I sat there with Venus, and I said, Venus, what is this like for you? And she said, actually, Vanessa, it's pretty scary. Coming into this tech company, I never in my wildest dreams when I grew up in Gisborne and left my whānau and came to Auckland, they would ever be in an office like this. But she said, it is so welcoming. There was a pōwhiri for me. There was a welcome. Everybody has embraced me. All of the senior leaders keep coming up and asking, how am I doing? She said, you meet with me every fortnight. How many of us had that 20-odd years ago? So I do believe it takes change one person at a time. Certainly at Microsoft, we have an incredible CEO, Satya Nadella, who came up with this global phrase that he wants Microsoft to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. And a lot of people looked at him and said, well, you're a bit strange. You know, it's not like we're going to leave this earth. What do you mean on this planet? And he said, well, I was a kid who grew up in India. And my world wasn't like what this world looks like. And we have to walk in the shoes of others. So when an organization at the top down really believes in change, really believes in diverse and empathetic thought, it filters down. Satya Nadella came to New Zealand, and Ngāti Whātua did a huge welcome for him. And in fact, there's a photo of Te Araha and Satya doing a hongi in Satya's book called Hit Refresh. New Zealand's on the world stage. But this is so important. This is not only diversity of thought and what we can achieve together. It is phenomenal what these young people are bringing. And, you know, this Venus, she's a professional drummer. She's a leader because she's been part of a kapa haka group. And she sits there and goes, wow, I'm working for Microsoft. So, yeah, it's phenomenal.
Thanks, Vanessa. On previous panels, we've had lots of shared experiences from companies around what they're doing in order to allow people to be their authentic selves, because that's kind of where we're headed, right? We want to feel like we can be ourselves at work. We had the CFO of Trade Me in Wellington, Tui, didn't we? And she talked about how their coders are allowed to come to work in onesies, because they're not seen by anybody else, and that's what makes them happy, and they do their job, and it's fine. They also have the scheme where you only actually have to be at your workplace between 10 and 2 every day. That's, you know, compulsory time. How else you work outside of those hours is up to you. And when I think about barriers for lots of people, but I'm thinking about myself as a mum juggling children, as many of us are, the barriers of putting yourself into leadership roles, into onto boards, it's time, right? And as along with self-worth and thinking that you're good enough, it's, do I have time? So I'm interested to know, Kate, how you juggle, because you're on a number of boards. You've got a full-time job. You've got 3 children. Yep. And here you are.
Yeah, look, it's we were just talking about it before. It's incredibly difficult. I think it's you live a life of compromise. You know, I personally always feel that I'm compromising homework, trying to juggle it all. It is very, very, very difficult. And
is that okay, Kate? Are you happy with that?
Am I happy with it? I live with it. No, not really. But I love working. I could never imagine not working. I love being a mum. I can't give them away. So that's. Although there are times where I really would like to, although they probably want to give me away at the moment. But anyway, so I think, I think you learn to live with it, and you learn to live with what's really important. So I'm quite disciplined around knowing what's really important for me and the time with the kids. So I'm really good at blocking time out of the diary. And I'm very open in saying, I'm off to the school sports thing, I'm off to this, I'm out for the day, I'm going
to
pick the kids up.
So you're role modelling that then to others in the office?
Yep, so everyone in the office, I put it in my diary, so everyone in my team can see where I'm at. I have an open diary policy, and I put in going to pick the kids up from school, going to this, going to that. So I'm very, very open and overt and very proud to go and support my children when they do their things. I've just stepped down actually from the board of Tupu Toa, and next year I will have done my 8 years with Auckland Rugby, and I will have done 3 years with the Blues. Actually, tomorrow night, for those of you who don't know, we're playing the Crusaders at home, so I've just got to give it a big plug. We'd love to see some of you along. And then I think I'll really step back and revisit how, because I tend to say yes to who here says yes, 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 and I think the busy people always say yes, right? So I'm disciplined on the diary with the kids stuff. My New Year's resolution is that there are 2 nights this week. 2 nights every week this year, I'm going to turn my phone off when I get home, and I'm not going to turn it on until they go to bed. And so far, I'm 100% on that. So, you know, I need to get better, but I find it hard because I'm just one of those people who always says yes. But I don't know, I like being busy.
You've been listening to the podcast of the M2 Women Journey to Excellence series with Lexus, the all-new UX. Thanks to Victor, GJ Gardner, Legacy Contracting, and New Zealand Steel. These conversations are from our live forums held in 2018 and 2019. For more details, go to journeytoexcellence.co.nz.